This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
It's a very special episode of our True Crime Podcast.
Today is day seven.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
That's it.
That's
seven.
It. Seven.
That's all. That's what we got. You ready to go? You
I
ready
am.
Hit?
Hit
the ground running.
Hit it. Hit it. Hit it.
Let me just say, I know it. I say this all the time, but this was a humdinger.
Humdinger.
And once in a while, I do get a little misty. This one kind of made me a little misty because I just don't understand why people do what they do.
And
I would punch him square in the face if
do
I could.
Do you think that's why it fascinates us to
probably
this whole true crime? Because we the audacity of some of these people and
just
how they...
Just the shockingness, like, I can't comprehend doing this.
The violence and...
Some of them I can see. I mean, I can't see it. Let me get that wrong. But you know what I mean? Like, if you have a jilted lover or a crime of passion. I mean, I could see how some people just get
like
so
a burning bed
angry.
Situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
This? No. This is a big no, 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 no. So here we go. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Today, Jen, day seven, we are going back to April 14th, 1989, where we meet a man by the name of Ramon Salcito. Now, he's 28 years old, and he grew up in Mexico, but at the age of 18, he met a young lady whom he would marry. Now, the thing is, Jen, she's pregnant, but not with his baby.
All right.
With another man's baby.
It happens, yeah.
After the baby arrived, his wife left him and went back to the father of the baby.
Oh.
He's still pretty young at this point. So he moves to California, Kern County area, to be exact. So leaving Mexico behind, he left his mom and his sisters to start a new life. It is here that he met a woman who would become his second wife named Deborah. And one child would be born. A little girl was born from this union. However, it wasn't meant to be. And the two separated, but they never actually got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
These two women... and their children would not know at this point they escaped a murderer, but the next would not be so lucky.
Dun, dun,
it's the mid-1980s, and Ramon would meet the love of his life, Angela Richards. The couple would have three daughters named Sofia, Carmina, and Teresa. Teresa. It was said that Carmina was his favorite. Ramon took a job at the Grand Cru Vineyard in 1987. Now, the winery was located in Sonoma County, and he was hired to run the bottling line. Ramon was known to be, how shall we say, quite the partier and very heavy drinker.
Mm.
The couple was barely making ends meet, but they were doing the best that they could. They lived in a small one-bedroom home on Baines Avenue in Boyle's Hot Springs, which was near the vineyard. Angela's parents lived nearby, and they often helped the growing family the best they could. While Ramon was working on April 11th, 1989, he was served with papers.
Hmm.
His second wife, Deborah, was trying to sue Ramon for child support payments because they did have that first baby. That was his second wife, and that was his child.
But they weren't divorced, though, right?
They were not divorced, but she was trying to sue for money. She needed money.
Okay.
Angela, at this point, believed that Ramon and Deborah had had an annulment, but that was not true.
Okay. So he lied.
Now,
and he's a scumbag for not paying for his kid. Okay.
Gotcha. Oh, it gets worse.
Oh, I'm, he's on here. He's the main guy, so I'm assuming it gets a lot worse.
Sure does. Also, recently, Angela broke down and admitted to Ramon that their oldest daughter, Sofia, was in fact another man's child.
Ooh.
And Ramon was not aware of this until she broke the news to him. So you can see how Ramon is starting to spiral, shall we say. Here we go. On Thursday, April 13th, 1989, during the early evening hours, Ramon stole several bottles of wine from his employer, and then he met up with a man named Mark at a local bar. He sold several cases of this wine to the man. Now, another man by the name of Michael was also at the bar. At around 11:30, Ramon took Michael outside to his car and sold Michael 9 bottles of sparkling wine. After that, the men each snorted a line or so of cocaine and then decided to go back to Ramon's house where they, along with Angela, enjoyed, what? Some more cocaine. The men then went back to the bar where they were attempting to find some more coke and buy it. After doing some more lines, the men then went to the Sonoma Mission Inn, where they wanted to party some more. Near 2 a.m. on Friday morning, Ramon went to his friend's house, Mario Mata, who was asleep next to his wife. Now, Mario noted that while Ramon smelled of liquor, he was not exactly extremely drunk, as in he could speak and stand. He wasn't totally out of it. Ramon begged Mario to leave and attend a party with him as he was leaving town the following day. Oh, and then Ramon adds, hey, and you know what? You can even have your brother move into my house. I'm not going to need it. In fact, he can just have it. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, where's he going? Yeah, we don't know that yet. Ramon asked for money to buy more drugs, but Mario said no. Mario did go with Ramon and the other men to the bar, but Mario only stayed a few minutes and then asked Ramon to take him back home, which he did. Ramon was back at the bar around 2:15 in the morning, where he met back up with Michael and another guy named Larry Mateo. The three men, they're doing a lot of partying, so you guys just stay with me till we get through this. The three men went back to the Sonoma Mission Inn. Now they're looking to rent a room in what I could only guess is a place to do more drugs. The men were turned away as it was $200 a night, and well, that's just way too much for them. So they left. At this point, Angela, Ramon's wife, made a $200 withdrawal at the bank at 5:39 a.m., and they have that marked. They know that. Now, she was not in a car, but she was walking. She was on foot. The bank was located over 2 miles from their home. What is she doing? We don't know yet.
I don't know.
Exactly. At around 7 a.m. in the morning, Angela's father, Robert, was getting ready to leave for work, as Angela's mother, Marion, and Angela's two little sisters, Ruth and Marie, were still asleep. Now remember, Robert and Marion lived near Ramon and Angela. They were doing the best to help the young couple raise their family. At the same time, a neighbor of Robert's would claim he noticed that their dog was outside, which was unusual. The Chihuahua was shaking and acting funny, so much so that he made a mental note of it. The neighbor, Roy Curtis, thought it was so strange, he even went over and knocked on the door to check it out, but no one answered. The neighbor went home, but another neighbor next door to the home would say that they heard a woman screaming, "No, no, and leave me alone." And this was right around 7 a.m. as well.
It amazes me how people don't look more into stuff like that.
Especially at 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's a little odd.
They just go about their business.
Now, here's the timeline, and there's a lot of time going on here, but it's just important to see how fast this went down. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that was around 7 a.m. And Robert did leave for work, leaving Marion and the two girls home.
Okay.
At 7:14 a.m., phone records indicate that a call lasting around 30 seconds was made from the home of Robert and Marion and placed to the home of Ramon and Angela.
Okay.
Near 7:30 a.m., a neighbor of Ramon and Angela witnessed Ramon arrive at home in another person's vehicle. Around 8 a.m., the neighbor heard people rushing into the home and then heard a gunshot and heard what she thought was Angela yell, "Watch out." Another shot rang out and Angela said once again, "Watch out," and then a third shot. At approximately 8 a.m., Tracy Tuvey, who was Ramon's supervisor at the winery, was leaving his house to go to work. Tracy would never make it. Just 20 minutes later, his body was discovered deceased inside his car in the driveway of the winery. Tuvey had been shot 3 times in his head and 1 in his arm. He killed seven people in like
a short period of time.
Not even 2 hours. Yeah.
A rampage. He went on a rampage.
Yes. Spree. So at 7:30, he's at his home with Angela, killing her. So then at 8 o'clock, 30 minutes later, he goes and shoots his boss at the winery.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now we're up to 8:15. Kenneth Booty was sleeping at his home when he awoke to a car pulling in his driveway. Now, Kenneth went outside, unsure of what was going on, and he saw Ramon there. And he's basically, hey, what's going on, Ramon? What are you doing at my house? Ramon then pulled a gun on him and fired a few shots. Kenneth fell to the ground when the bullet struck his shoulder. Ramon fled. His wife comes running out. Thank goodness she was not hurt. He would survive the attack. According to phone records, a phone call lasting 1 minute and 40 seconds was placed from Ramon's house. He's back at home at 8:26. This call was to Mexico, to Ramon's mother. He called his mom.
Hmm.
It was 9 a.m. when Sergeant Brown and Lieutenant
Dan
Ballinger of the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department are about to make a horrific and grisly discovery. They pull up to Ramon's house. After knocking on the door with no one answering, the pair enter the home, and they find Angela on the ground. Angela had been shot 3 times, 2 to her head and 1 to her shoulder. 6 bullet casings were found in the home. Ramon Salcito was now on the run and a wanted murderer. Their 3 girls were MIA. Police at this point are hoping that he has them and they're fine. Ramon attempted to make a bank withdrawal in the amount of $140 from the couple's joint checking account, but it was denied. Now, this was timestamped at 9:24 a.m. He was then seen entering a store in San Rafael where he bought a shirt and a pair of pants. Ramon's abandoned car would be found across the street from the store later that day. Inside the car, officers locate a gun with the chamber still in the round, a few handwritten notes, which were just bizarre, and a knife with blood on it. Near the knife was bloodied children's clothing. Just after noon, 12 o'clock, Ramon cashed the check that was given to him for the stolen wine, the wine that he stole and sold to those men. He had already reached San Francisco by this time. Sometime during the afternoon, the body of Ramon's mother-in-law, Marion, along with Angela's little sisters, were found in the Richards home. Marion and 8-year-old Marie were found on the hallway floor. 12-year-old Ruth was found in the kitchen face down. Both Marion and Ruth's nightgowns had been pulled above their waist, and bloody handprints were found on Ruth's thighs and buttocks. The autopsy would reveal all 3 of them had died from severe blood loss due to the cuts on their throats. Marion had also suffered blunt force trauma to the back of her head, seemingly to knock her out before the attack. This is when I got a little misty-eyed here, Jen.
Yeah.
The following day, located about 6.5 miles from Ramon's home, at the bottom of an embankment in a field near a quarry, 2 men were outside walking around the quarry when they made an awful discovery. At first, they thought they were baby dolls, like large baby dolls, and it was actually the 3 daughters of Ramon and Angela, and they had been dumped. Sophia and Teresa were deceased, while Carmina was sitting near their bodies in shock.
Oh, he saved Carmina.
He didn't.
Or
he killed her.
Oh.
Yeah, he thought he did. He thought he did.
He thought he killed her, but she survived.
Which is ironic, since that was said to be his favorite.
Yeah.
It was determined through the autopsy that 4-year-old Sophia died from blood loss. Her throat had been slashed 3 times that went clear to the spine. The doctors believe she may have stayed alive for a bit of time due to the fact that they believe shock would have slowed her blood flow. Sophia had defensive wounds on her hands. Defensive against her dad.
Mm.
Is that awful? 1-year-old Teresa also died from blood loss, as her throat had been sliced twice. Finally, sweet little Carmina, age 3, rumored to be his favorite, has 1 large cut across her throat, starting at 1 side of her jawbones, going all the way through to the other jawbone. The wound sliced off part of her tongue and leaving her voice box fully exposed. Now, this is just, sometimes things happen. I don't know what it is, but thank goodness it did. This little girl survived the unthinkable. Carmina sat up by her sisters, remaining still and using her chest to support her chin for over 30 hours. I think it was about 36 hours. Doctors said that if she would have actually laid down on the ground, her tongue would have most likely cut off her airway and she would have suffocated. She also had defensive wounds to her hands. While she was out there, she told doctors in the emergency room that she got hungry, so she ate pebbles.
Oh, Lord.
Also, she was able to tell the doctors, "Daddy, cut me."
Mm.
And I guess the doctor said the way that she was positioned on the embankment, her body was kind of almost like sitting up a little bit.
Right.
Because if she would have choked to death, if she would have laid down and she stayed in that position. Bless her little heart. 3 years old. The knife found in Ramon's car was believed to be the same one that inflicted his daughter's injuries. The gun was similar to the type of guns that Mr. Richards kept in his home. He stole the gun in the Richard household to kill Marion, Ruth, and Marie, his wife's mother and sisters. The hunt was on for this killer, and it would not take long to find him. On April 19th, 1989, at a train station outside of Los Mochis, I hope I'm saying that right, Mexico, Ramon Salcido was arrested. Ramon was placed on a plane headed back to California to stand trial for these atrocities. It was only minutes after he was on the plane, he told police, "I was going to turn myself in. I made a mistake. I'm guilty."
Okay, sure, buddy.
You're just about to turn yourself in when you got caught. Turn yourself in. You ran from San Francisco to Mexico. Which, by the way, I did the time in here, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. Ramon would make a tape-recorded confession about all of his crimes. He stated the idea of murdering his loved ones hit him when he was served with child support papers while at work on Thursday. Ramon said that evening when he went home, he and Angela got in a fight, and Ramon went to the bar to drink and do coke. After the wild night described earlier, Ramon said he came home right before 5 a.m. to an empty bed and three sleeping children. Angela had left him, but left the children behind. This was her on foot to the bank. He was enraged and right then knew he wanted to kill Angela. He then went and snorted some more lines of coke, loaded up the three baby girls, and went to look for Angela. When an hour had passed and Ramon still could not find Angela, he decided the best course of action would be to kill his children and then kill himself. He drove to the quarry, where he took each child out separately and slit their throats while standing behind each child. He then tossed their body into the field near the creek. Instead of killing himself, he decided to continue his reign of terror. Ramon then drove to his in-laws, Robert and Marion's home. Ramon said he watched Robert leave for work that morning and then went to the door and asked Marion if Angela was there. When Marion said she was not there, Ramon asked Marion for a screwdriver. When she turned her back, Ramon hit Marion over the head with a car jack. Ramon then went inside the home where he ran into Ruth and slit her throat from a knife he got from the kitchen. After this, Marie asked where her mom was and Ramon slit her throat as well. Ramon was attempting to leave and was surprised by Marion, who was at the front door.
Uh-huh.
Ramon then cut her throat as well. So she had survived that hit, right? The jack hit, and kind of came to. During the attack, Ramon cut his finger, so he used Marie's underwear to stop the bleeding. Ramon then went and stole a gun from his father-in-law with the idea that he would use this gun to kill Angela and then kill himself. Ramon would tell officers it was at this point that he was so upset to learn that their oldest child, Sophia, was not fathered by him. And a later test would confirm this, but this was not the reason for her dying. He claimed when he went back to work and Angela was not at home, she told him she was going to call the police. And that's when he really lost it because she left him.
Ugh, Lord.
So he says. Due to this, he panicked and then he shot Angela twice in the head and was going to shoot himself too. But yet he did not. How often do we hear that?
Exactly. Way too often.
Instead, he decided to enjoy a few drinks in his car and venture over to kill his bosses, Tracy and Kenneth, from the winery. Ramon drove to the winery where he would wait for Tracy. Tracy pulled in to the winery, to the job. Ramon approached him and told Tracy he was going to die. So Ramon's basically, hey, you're going to die.
Gotcha.
Tracy, his boss, looks at Ramon and says, is this because I was going to fire you?
Oh, and Ramon, okay.
Ramon looked shocked at this news and commented, so you've got that in mind? Not knowing that he was actually going to get fired. Ramon then drove to the other boss's house to kill him. But when he shot him and he got shot in the shoulder, he actually started running. And Ramon thought it was, quote, too much work, and he went back home instead. Ramon then called his mother and told her what he had done. His mother suggested, hey, before you kill yourself, come to Mexico and see me and your sister one last time. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I did the little time thing to see, you know, if you make a rash decision or crime of passion. Then he made his way to San Francisco, Jen, where he would, he's not going to fly to Mexico, mind you. He's going to catch a bus to Mexico.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the article that I got this from said it took several hours. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what do we mean several hours? So I looked up how long it would take from a bus ride to San Francisco to where he's going. Over 42 hours to complete this, right? So he had lots of time to think, and yet he still did not kill himself. You've killed all these people, and you're going to go visit your mom and your sister, and then you're going to kill yourself. He was never going to kill himself. He's never going to kill himself.
Well, he had to say goodbye to his mom and sister first, right?
So this brings us up to Ramon awaiting trial. On October 30th, 1990, Ramon was found guilty on 6 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of second-degree murder, and 2 counts of attempted murder. Ramon was sentenced to death on November 16th. Ramon Salcido remains on death row in San Quentin in California. A little interesting note, and I just found this out this morning because I was cruising around. 17 years after he tried to kill her, his sweet little daughter, Carmina, went to visit her father in jail. Kudos to her, because I'd be like, nope. He did apologize to her and all the people that his crimes caused harm to, but we all know words are empty and they mean nothing. Too late. Like the lives that were ruined there. So that is the story of the 7th Nightmare Before Christmas.
Wow. He's something, huh?
I'm just like, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, how could you kill your babies? Seriously.
That, no.
Violently, too.
Violent.
Just...
And they fought him. Once they would fight back, you would think, and it's not like he had a mental illness. Not that mental illness is an excuse.
Daddy cut me. No, he was mad because he was going broke. And he was losing the life he had. 4, 3, and 1.
It's always about money, isn't it? Mostly.
Well, I think, and just drugs. I think he was a drug addict.
An alcoholic.
He was having problems at work.
Abuse.
He was going to get fired. I mean, I think that's ironic.
His life was spiraling, but why not just take care of himself and not bother the other family members? I don't know. Like, it's because chicken,
and the one thing I'm not sure about, but I do find it interesting, and I don't know if it was implied or here, let me use one of my English teacher words, inferred. But the fact that the article that I based this off of said that their underwear was pulled to their ankles, and that was Ruth, who was one of his wife's little sisters, and the mother's, but also that there was a bloody handprint on her behind and on her thighs. I don't know if he just did that or I don't know. I'm not sure is, I guess, my whole point.
But right.
It's a little weird.
Very interesting.
So, and he's still alive. I looked him up. He's still there. Big jerk. I found this website that's really pretty, kind of cool. And I spent a whole day on it because I wanted to see him. So I knew he was in San Quentin and I knew he killed 7 people. So I was like, okay, because a lot of times I'll just go in and you can look up inmates and see where they are and stuff. But if you go to San Quentin, and this is interesting for other people out there, because like I spent a day doing this, that's what I do. You can go in San Quentin and you can look up the people by their name, but it also has a drop-down menu, number of victims. So then, of course, I went to 6+ because I was looking for him. And then, you know, you click on their photo and then it pops up and it tells you about their crime. So I went down the rabbit hole of looking at all the people on death row in San Quentin.
And it only does they did. The prisoners that are in San Quentin, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I found people that we've talked about before and I was like, oh, yeah, I know that ugly mug. Click. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Wow, so, that's interesting. I'll have to go play on that site and see what I can find. Yep.
I usually try to look up the people to see if they're still there and if they've come up for parole or anything interesting like that.
Yeah, so, yeah. I usually do too. A lot of times they're still there.
They're still there. So that is the seventh
where
day.
They need to be.
I just, like I said, I could see him killing Angela. I could see him. No, I mean, I can't see it.
Yes.
But then, you know, he got mad at his bosses. Okay.
We've done a lot of tree crime where we not understand, but we get why people kill who they kill.
But his
kill.
Babies.
But we both don't understand the babies. I don't get it.
The oldest one's four. What's she going to do?
Uh-huh. Not to justify it, but maybe he thought, well, I've already killed her mother and I'm going to kill myself. So saying, I guess it's best just to, they need to go too. It's best if they just go.
Not during
screw
all this
that.
Time that it didn't occur to him. Then he goes and sits on a bus for 42. That's like 42 hours. That's 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And none of this was like, hey, I'm in a gas station here in the middle of Mexico. Let me just end it now.
Yep.
And then like they
chicken.
They arrest him in Mexico and he goes, I was going to turn myself in.
You were, Bert, buddy.
You were also going to kill yourself and you didn't. So, yeah.
It's chicken shit.
That's it, Jen. Asshole. And I guess tomorrow we'll be back to you for day eight.
I got a good one. Got an interesting one, I should say.
We know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Until tomorrow, Jen, remember, lock your doors. Ding, 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 ding. That's Christmas.
Oh,
slays.
Is it?
Ding, 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 ding.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Merry Christmas.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.